Hello everyone, welcome to J-Talk Extra Time. John Steele here in the host chair this week, but I'm joined by a familiar co-host. It's James Taylor. James, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks, John. How are you?
Yes, very well, thanks, James. Sweating to death, sweltering hot weather across Japan, as I'm sure listeners will have seen on the news. But yeah, we're getting there, I think. We're making it, James. The summer holidays are around the corner. But without further ado, I suppose we should talk about the J2 action from last weekend, if that's okay, James. Round 23 is in the books, and listeners might be expecting us to start by talking about the big clash from the top of the table, Yokohama FC against Niigata. But we're eclectic hipsters, aren't we, James? So we're going to instead, James, we're going to lead off with Jeff Chiba's home game against Tokyo Verdy, which was played on Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. Not the wisest decision in retrospect, because I think the temperature at kickoff was about 31 degrees, and it probably felt a lot hotter with the sunshine and the humidity. But in the end, it turned out to be a pretty entertaining affair. James, it finished Jeff Chiba 3, Tokyo Verdy 1. And in this game, Jeff took the lead almost straight away. Iki Arai scoring a free header from Taishi Taguchi's free kick. That came in the fifth minute. And it was 2-0 about 8 minutes before half-time, when Jeff were awarded a very soft penalty. Tomoya Miki and Verdy defender Seiya Baba were tussling for the ball together inside the box. Baba lost his balance and went down, and Miki went down too. On the replays, this looked a 50-50 to me. Just looked like two players were sort of had hold of each other's shirts or were grappling, and they both went down. But yep, nevertheless, a penalty was given, and Miki just about scored it, although Verdy keeper Matthias got two good hands on the ball. He couldn't keep it out. So 2-0 to Jeff at half time. Then right at the start of the second half, Jeff scored a third, which effectively killed the game off. Koya Kazama with a free header from a corner that Matthias managed to save, but the ball ran loose for Iki Arai again to tap in his second of the game. After that, Verdy came on strong, trying to get back into the match, and Byron Vasquez had two good chances for them, but one was saved and the other was fired over the bar. And then we kind of got a flashpoint right at the end, James. In the 94th minute, Vasquez accidentally, I think, kicked the Jeff Chiba goalkeeper Shota Arai in the head when he had the ball in his hands. Arai reacted very angrily, pushing Vasquez in the chest with two hands, and that meant that he got a red card. And yes, I think Jeff had used all their substitutes, so we had the fairly rare sight of their centre-back, Chang Mingyu, going in goal for the last few minutes. There was no jersey for him, so he had to put on the backup goalkeeper, Sota Matsubara's number 31 shirt, and go in goal. And yeah, it was sort of comedy stuff, really. Chang letting a goal from a corner almost immediately, Boniface and Duca heading in, but it was just a consolation for Verdy, and it finished Jeff Chiba 3, Tokyo Verdy 1. We should add, James, by Japanese standards, J-League standards, there was a hooliganism after the game, with tempers flaring in the away end after what Verdy fans perceived as being a pretty dodgy refereeing performance. Verdy have banned one of their supporters for 4 matches after he threw, threw a plastic bottle towards the pitch. And another fan has been banned for a single game for squirting liquid towards the field. Don't worry, James, it's from a plastic bottle, so it's nothing erotic about it, I don't think. Anyway, yeah, I think the biggest crime there is just wasting liquid when it was so hot, on a day like that. And also, I'll add one other point. Surely a better punishment would be forcing these guys to just watch Verdy try and defend corners, for an hour or something. That seems to be more trouble than banning them from the stadium. But yeah, Jeff Chiba 3, Tokyo Verdy 1 at full time. Jeff on the edge of the playoffs and travelling nicely in 7th. Verdy in 14th, but this was a first loss in 5 matches for them, and perhaps the end of the Hiroshi Jofuku bounce that they had from that win over Yamaguchi last week. James, lots to unpack here, I think. Mm-hmm. What did you make of the events at the very, very hot Fukuda Denshi Arena?
Yeah, well, we said last week when we were previewing that kicking off at 2 o'clock probably isn't a good idea, and that, I think, proved to be the case, because the heat obviously got to quite a few people. I could start with the goals. I thought with the penalty, it looked to me like it was Mickey who knocked Baba over, and Baba, because he was knocked over by Mickey, fell into Mickey and tripped him over. So I think that's a little bit harsh to give a penalty for that, although perhaps in the replay Baba had a little grab of Mickey's shirt, I'm not sure. The other two goals that Jeff scored were pretty poor defending from Verdi. Free headers from set pieces, and that was not good enough from them. But I think for Verdi, they had two clean sheets to start Jofuku's stint as manager, including one against the J1 champions. So it's a pretty good start. It seems obviously that he hasn't magically fixed all of their defensive problems in a fortnight or in a week or however long he's been there, of course. But I think, there's still a lot of work to be done in defence. But it seems like, surely, if anyone can do it, Jofuku can. And if he can't do it, then maybe they should all just give up. Because he's got a pretty good record as a defensively minded manager, I suppose we should say. With the stoppage time shenanigans, I only watched this on the highlights, but what I thought was interesting. First, I think that the Jeff defender Yaguchi actually pushed Vasquez, which is why his foot bumped into the back of Arai's head. And what was interesting about it, of course, Arai got straight up and shoved him in the chest or in the throat or something. But then there was a big melee and Arai was all involved, you know, trying to get at various people and shouting at them. And then it cut to 2 minutes later where he was shown a red card. But by that point, he was lying on the ground. So I don't know if he'd been told to lie down because he took a bump to the head and was getting treatment, or if he just was being a kind of melodramatic and gone down injured, in inverted commas. But yeah, anyway, he gets a rest for a few games now, doesn't he? Because he got a straight red card. And then, of course, we were treated to comedy defender in goal, which is always entertaining. And a goal scored in the 99th minute, which is also something that you don't see particularly often. And what I was thinking about Jeff is that they're only one loss in their last nine. They're unbeaten in seven. They're in seventh. Like you said, they're only a point off the playoffs. They're quietly hit form. After I remember doing one of the roundups on the pod not that long ago and seeing them down in 18th or something. And they did the same last year. They quietly hit form, but they timed it well towards the end of the season. So if there had been playoffs, you know, they were in with a chance of making them, but there weren't playoffs because, Jeff typically do business when it doesn't matter. Now, I wonder if they're peaking too soon and they're going to fall away before the end of the season. But if they can keep this up, then the playoffs, I think, are a realistic possibility for them, because I think they've got, like they had last year, they've got a good team. They've got a good strike partnership in Keita Puanika and Solomon Sakuragawa. And that partnership's made even better with Tomoya Miki providing and also scoring himself, like he did last year. And I've been saying it about Shion Honma at Niigata since 2020, but surely Miki's not going to be in J2 much longer, because he's really, really good. And I'm sure he's got the talent to play at a higher level. And also, what I say about Jeff is that they seem to be coping very well without Daisuke Suzuki, who's a big big presence. He's the captain and he's the centre of their defence. But now they're going to have to be without him and Arai, who's another big experienced leader, because he went and got himself sent off. Mm-hmm. So perhaps this is the end of their good run, now that he's gone and done that and they've all got heat stroke and turned into a bunch of idiots.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we can probably say, I take into account everything you're saying about Jeff Chiba. We are sort of unusually positive about them on this pod so far. They're pretty fortunate, I think, like you said, with the penalty. For me, that was probably a sort of, if I was the ref, I think I'm probably waving play on there, you know. But they... Yeah, I don't think we can have any arguments about the other two goals that they scored, you know, the free headers, as you mentioned. I don't think it was in the DAZN highlights package, or maybe I missed it, but I think Verdi had a pretty decent shout for a penalty as well. that wasn't given. So I think that probably led to a lot of the fan frustration at the end of the match as well. I did a bit of I was looking at the table. I think Jeff Chiba, you can really see Yoon Jong-kwan's influence, because they've got the third best defence in the league, right? I think Tokushima and Okayama have conceded fewer, but then Jeff have got the third best defence, which is not something you can say often. But I think they've conceded 20 this season after 23 rounds. I did a quick look back, and I think after 23 games last season, they conceded 21, so about the same. But, you know, for a team which, I think we had this discussion on a previous pod, where they would, you know, quite often be shipping sort of 60, 70 in a season, you know, back in the day, sort of Yamaguchi numbers. You can definitely see that their kind of direction of travel is a positive one. Whether it's enough to get them into the playoffs this year, we'll have to wait and see. But I think they're definitely on the pitch. They seem to be heading in the right direction. Attendances are not very good. I think they were dwindling before the pandemic, and COVID seems to have knocked another couple of thousand off the kind of regular sort of hardcore match going, you know, match day fans. So that's something that they'll look to address. I think, yeah, on the as you put it, the stoppage time shenanigans. I wonder if maybe Arai realised he was in trouble, so went down, you know, injured in inverted commas, to try and wriggle out of his red card. Something that I'll talk about later in the sort of solo roundup is there was a very similar incident in the Yokohama game against Niigata, where Yokohama centre-back Gabriel lost his temper with Koji Suzuki, and he pushed him over with two hands in the chest. That was a yellow card. But if you look at the two incidents side by side, there is not a great deal in either of them. You know, they're both red cards, probably, if you apply the law strictly. And I just wonder if, is it easier psychologically for the ref to send a player off in the last minute when the game is already up than it is to send a player off in? I think Gabriel's was in the first half against Niigata, and it was one that game was in the balance, that was finally poised. So I wonder if that is possibly subconsciously something to think about. But yes, I think taking into account, you know, looking at things in the round, I think Jeff probably did enough to win that game. Based, you know, they scored a couple of uncontested goals, shall we say. And then the sending off didn't hurt them too much. The only other thing that I thought was funny was that initially Taishi Taguchi, I don't know if you saw, he took the goalkeeper's jersey and was putting the gloves on. And I think by this point, Andrew Kumagai was a captain. He had the armband, and he just came across. I think he must have taken the armband because Arai was sent off. But he came across, and he just took the shirt and the gloves off Taguchi and handed them to Jan Minguen. I think that is because Taguchi's he's not short, but he's vertically challenged compared to Jan Minguen. So I think it was a case of just like, it was a bit like a kind of playground match, you know, who's the tallest, you go in goal, kind of thing. But yeah, luckily it didn't do them too much damage. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they go on without, like you said, Daisuke Suzuki. He's the linchpin at the back. Yeah, Arai's been excellent in goal. So yeah, we'll wait and see. Yeah, Verdi, in a way, it was typical Verdi, wasn't it? You kind of don't know what you're going to get. They're either going to win 3-1 or lose 3-1, it seems like. At the moment. So yeah, all right, okay, well, let's keep it moving then. James, we'll go on and kind of move up the table a little bit to the Michinoku Derby. There were 15,372 fans inside the Yurtech Stadium for this game. Sendai 1, Yamagata 1 is how it finished. I think most of these supporters were royally entertained. Loads of chances in this match. Early on, Yamagata's keeper, Masaaki Goto, made a smart double save to keep the scores level. And then Yamagata took the lead with an absolute golazo in the 33rd minute. Their big centre-back, Hiroki Noda, acrobatically hooking in a volley from Shintaro Kokubu's free kick. To be honest, I didn't know Noda could do that. And from the way he celebrated, I think he might have surprised himself with his flexibility there. Fantastic goal. Taiki Kato should probably have put Yamagata 2-0 up before half time, but he headed wide, perhaps should have hit the target. And in the second half, Sendai ended up throwing the kitchen sink at their visitors, but a combination of good goalkeeping from Goto and some poor finishing from Kamen Togashi, amongst others, seemed destined to hand Yamagata the 3 points. But 5 minutes from time, Yasushi Endo's low cross caused panic in the Yamagata box. Yusuke Minagawa's volley was palmed away by Goto, but only into the path of Masato Nakayama. He's one of these players that's always in the right place in the penalty area, isn't he? He was on hand, and he tucked in a rebound for 1-1. There was still time after that in a sort of frantic last 5 minutes for Sendai keeper Daichi Sugimoto, who was playing his first game since March, by the way, to make a pair of good saves to keep out some Yamagata headers. And then in the 96th minute, Sendai probably should have had a penalty when Minagawa's shirt was pulled in the box as he went up for an overhead kick, but there was no whistle for a spot kick, and the game finished Sendai 1, Yamagata 1. Sendai still third, but now no wins in their last four matches, and they're just 5 points ahead of Okayama in fourth, who of course have played a game fewer. Yamagata also wobbling a little bit, no wins in their last four either, and they're in eighth. What did you make of this one, James? It was end-to-end stuff. I don't know if the quality was there necessarily, but it was exciting.
Yeah, definitely. This was, I only saw the highlights of this, but it was really entertaining highlight package. That goal from Noda was fantastic. And, yeah, not bad for a centre-back. And I think, yeah, like you said, Masato Nakayama is always in the right place at the right time, isn't he? You can rely on him for a goal when his team needs it. He's done it so many times to Kanazawa when he was at Mito. He'll be there to finish a move when you need it. And I think the build up to that as well, it was Foginho and Yasushi Endo were heavily involved. They're both subs. Foginho came on at half time and Endo came on after an hour. And it was also in the highlights a couple of minutes before they'd combined to set up a quite a good chance for Nakayama that he'd headed wide. So it's good. It's good to see that the subs having an impact, because looking at the Sendai lineup, they've made several changes to the starting 11 for this, which I think is fair enough because they had that cup game Wednesday where they had to play Cerezo Osaka, and if think I still think of them as a title chasing team. They should have the strength in depth for that not to be a problem, but you just kind of summarised their recent form is not very good, and they're in danger. We talked again last week, I think, didn't we? They're in danger perhaps of getting cut adrift from the top two, because I was worried about their defence, but I mean, they only scored one here, but I'm used to them scoring two or three or four in a game, so it's concerning sort of run for them, and I don't know what the manager's going to do to fix it, but I guess he'll just keep doing more of the same because it's been working all right. I mean, they at the start of the season, they're on this kind of three wins and a loss schedule, three wins and a loss, three wins and a loss, three wins and a loss, but now they haven't won since match day 19 when they beat Tochigi 2-1. I think they've only got one win in their last six or something like that, isn't it? It's not very good. And as for Yamagata, I don't know what to make of them still. I mean, they've only won two of their last nine. They've drawn four. There doesn't seem to be any kind of pattern to their results. They're just really inconsistent. They can't close out games when they're ahead, but they can come from behind to draw. But they, you think with the attacking talent they have, they should be, well, I mean, they're eighth. They're only 3 points off sixth, but you'd think that they would be playing much better than they are. It's not that the results have been terrible, really, because they're still in eighth, but they're just not convincing. They haven't been very convincing recently. I wonder if perhaps it's to do with Kota Yamada. He missed a few weeks, maybe he was injured, and he's been a sub in three of the last four games. So if maybe without him, things are much less, what's the word, smooth for Yamagata. I don't know.
I think something I noticed with just to kind of compare Sendai and Yamagata, this might be my imagination sort of playing tricks on me, but I wonder if you mentioned the squad depth, and I think it's something that both teams, both squads have, especially in the kind of front positions like midfields and forward. But I just wonder if there's a bit too much tinkering going on for me. I think every time, I see, like, I think in the, I'm not sure if it actually panned out this way, but in the kind of starting graphic lineup for Yamagata, they had, like, I think Shintaro Kokubu was like one of the two strikers. You know, for example, and I don't really think it's a bit strange to see a team with so many forwards available having him up as one of the strikers. That would be to me like an emergency, like auxiliary option. I guess we have to maybe cut the team some slack. You mentioned Sendai having the midweek round. Like, teams are stretched in terms of having, you know, so many fixtures in a short space of time, etc. It's a line we trot out quite often, but it does happen to be true, especially this season. You know, because the season has to finish a few weeks earlier, you know, for the World Cup, etc. But yeah, I think consistency is something that they're both lacking, Sendai and Yamagata. And I wonder if I'd be tempted to say one way to try and get that is just to pick a settled team a bit more. They seem to have quite a settled. Well, Sendai don't even have a settled goalkeeper, do they? I think every time I see them, they've got either it's one of the three keepers, like Obata, Stojic, or it was Sugimoto, wasn't it, for this game. So I wonder if 23 rounds into a 42-game season, I would kind of assume the manager would have maybe 9 names on like a first-choice team sheet.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe there's a couple of question marks over maybe one or two positions. But I'm at the Sendai and Yamagata, I'm not sure that's quite the case. I think it's probably more there's perhaps 5 players on each team that are kind of, you know, the nailed-on starters, and the rest are kind of in flux. It's not working too badly, is it? They're 4th and 8th in the table. So they're doing something right. But yeah, I'm tempted to feel like Yamagata in particular, I was expecting a bit more this season. And Sendai, I wasn't expecting much at the start of the season, if I'm honest. They sort of raised my expectations with how they started. And then I'm kind of curious to see now if they are reverting to where I thought they were going to be, which is on the fringes of the playoffs, possibly outside, or whether they're going to sort of turn it round and sort of get back in amongst Yokohama and Niigata at the very summit. Yamagata, I'm kind of the same. I think they... we're still sort of waiting for the real Yamagata to sort of make their presence felt this season. I think so. Yeah, big games coming up. I mean, we'll talk about the weekend fixtures in a minute, but you know, Sendai go to Machida, don't they? On Saturday, and I mean, Machida in good form, tough nut to crack. You could imagine if Sendai come away from that game with nothing, they're not quite in crisis, but they would be, you know. The good work that they've done in the first half of the season would be sort of ebbing away a little bit, you'd think. So yeah, we'll wait and see. But I'm kind of it didn't really surprise me that this game was a 1-1 draw, not just because it was a kind of Tohoku derby affair, but because the way these two teams have been playing recently, they do seem to have had just like one goal in them per game.
Yeah,
and, that's kind of what they got, isn't it? But yes, maybe we should just mention one more time. I think Sendai, I'm not sure how they didn't get a penalty.
So a clear pull. That was a definite shirt pull, and it prevented him from being able to take the shot. So I'm not sure why the referee did not give that.
Well, I just wonder, you know, like I'm saying, it's much easier to send off a goalkeeper in the 95th minute. Than it is to send off a centre-back in the 40th. Is it more difficult psychologically to give like a match-winning penalty in the 96th minute? You know that Yamagata have already been done by dodgy refereeing once this season, you know, for the game that is still to be replayed, right? Where they had the keeper sent off incorrectly. So I'm not suggesting a sort of league-wide referee conspiracy, but I just wonder if sometimes... things subconsciously play on referees' minds sometimes. And on the other hand, look, this was a 4 p.m. kickoff, James. I know it's up north, but it was still pretty hot there as well, wasn't it? Perhaps the referee was just like, I need to get down the tunnel and have a drink. I don't want any more football. So yeah, but to be honest, even though that should have been a penalty, I thought a draw was probably the right result, the way that the game went. But we'll see. Like I say, I'm still not sure which is the real Sendai, if it's an automatic promotion challenging team or a playoff chaser. I think with Yamagata, I'm kind of one rung below on the ladder of are you guys going to be in the playoffs or not, is kind of the question that I'm not sure about yet. But we still have a few games left to find out, I suppose. James, I'll move you on if that's okay. We'll talk about one more game in our sort of pick of the week. section, and we're still not talking about your Yokohama FC against Niigata. That's coming up later. But yes, in true hipster fashion, let's go to Ryukyu, their home game against Machida, which finished Ryukyu 0, Machida 1. Not a classic game of football by any means, but it was a perfect birthday present for Machida boss Ranko Popovic, who I think was celebrating his 55th birthday over the weekend. In the other technical area, it wasn't the start that Ryukyu's new boss Nacho Fernandez wanted, was it, losing 1-0. The crucial goal came in the 28th minute here, and it was a bit of a weird one. A looping header from Shohei Takahashi from a Taiki Hirato free kick. I think the actual distance, probably about 16 yards on this header from Takahashi. And it was sort of looped over the goalkeeper, Junto Taguchi, and dropped into the back of the net. It was the sort of goal that you only ever see a relegation-threatened team concede, I think, James. Not something that you see at the top of the table. Ryukyu had some chances in the second half. Lee Yong-jik, Ryunosuke Noda, Shinya Uehara, the kind of usual suspects, missing chances for them, but no cigar, no goal, and it finished Ryukyu 0, Machida 1. Nacho Fernandez has a huge job on his hands, doesn't he? Ryukyu are bottom, they're 8 points adrift of the safety line now on a run of four straight defeats, whereas for Machida, things are looking pretty good. They're handily placed in fifth. James, any comments on this game and Ryukyu and Machida in general?
This was a not particularly eventful game, judging by the highlights. I'd say Machida, they're good enough for the win. They didn't really have to do very much. It seemed like they were able to go through Ryukyu when they needed to, and Ryukyu weren't... I've seen a fair bit of Ryukyu this year, and although they're bottom and they're 8 points away from safety, I've never seen them as nondescript as they were in this match. They really didn't seem to offer much at all. And even, for example, the game where they played Kanazawa, they were absent for the first 40 minutes, but for the final 50 minutes, they were really, really good. Whereas in this match, it just seemed like there was nothing. There was nothing from Ryukyu, really. No convincing. I mean, they had chances, but no one convincing. No one looks like they're going to score them. The goal they conceded, it like the goalie completely caught off guard with this big header looped over him. It seems like they're completely bereft of confidence at both ends of the pitch. And I think the new manager's biggest job is going to be to instill some confidence, change this mentality. I mean, sort out the defensive problems he can probably do, but changing this mentality is going to be really, really hard, because I suppose a positive is that they didn't concede a late goal in this match, which is first time for a while, surely. And another good thing is that Fernandez is actually there now. He's in training, he's on the bench, he's seen this match, he was in charge for the match, so he's had a good look at the squad over the last week or two. He's seen them in action up close. He knows what he's got to work with. He knows who he wants to work with and who he doesn't need or he's not going to use anymore. He'll have some idea of the sort of player he's going to need to try and bring in during the transfer window, which is going to open soon. And he's going to have to act fast and effectively, because half the season's gone and 8 points is quite a lot to make up when you are playing as badly as Ryukyu are. And I don't know if he's going to be able to do it.
Yeah, I think he's definitely going to be in sort of the conversation for manager of the season if he can turn things around for Ryukyu. The question I was going to ask you was, I wasn't going to ask you if they can get out of trouble, because I think, you know, this is the J League we're talking about, and eight points in the J League is not as big as a gap as it would be in Europe, maybe. You know, Ryukyu, it's not inconceivable that they reel off three straight wins from somewhere and suddenly they're back they're back out of the relegation zone. But I think my question is more like, do you think they will do it and they've got the transfer coming up, which is going to be a big one. I assume, like most J2 teams, there isn't a great deal of money around for them to spend. It's even possible that they might, you know, lose players potentially, although I don't think any of the players have particularly enhanced their reputations with how things have gone so far this year. So I don't know. What do you think? I mean, they just have to start picking up wins soon, don't they? Or otherwise, Fernandez is going to find it really, like you said, changing the mentality of the team. At the moment, there's still, you know, 18, 17 games to go, but that suddenly, that's 14, then 12, then 10, and you're in the realms of giving press conferences where you're talking about 10 cup finals, and you know we're not down till the table says we're down, kind of thing. What's your kind of gut telling you about Ricky James for this season?
So never say never for all the reasons that you just said. It's J2, so anything can happen. They do have the players and the new manager coming in. They've got their new player already in this guy Kelvin, so yeah, they can do it. Will they do it? I don't know. I don't think they'll be able to. I guess their biggest hope is going to be that they can somehow start picking up points. Maybe just through grinding out results in the way that Tochigi and Iwate can, or through blind luck, and then hoping that teams like Omiya and someone else, maybe Gunma, keep losing.
Yeah, Gunma not looking too clever just at the moment, are they, in the league?
Yeah. So if for Ryukyu to stay up, it's going to have to take a monumental shift in their play, and they're going to have to hope that two other teams are worse than them.
I think Ryukyu are an interesting case because they don't have, as far as I can tell on paper, their sort of like first 11 is not massively inferior to most, you know, quite a lot of other squads in the kind of bottom half of the table. Like, I mean, when Yasuhiro Higuchi was fired, they were like in mid-table, you know, and that was considered that he was underperforming with the resources that he had. So I don't really know where they go from here, but what I do know from experience of watching my beloved Stoke City get relegated, it's a very bad idea to start thinking, oh well, there's still 17 games left, it's going to be okay, or there's still 14 games left, it's going to be okay, because you run out of games quicker than you so it's a bit like dealing with your paycheck, you know, when you start thinking like that. There's always too many days left at the end of your money, and I think Ryukyu need to start picking up wins very soon. Hopefully for all our Ryukyu supporting friends, and just J League in general, it's good to have them in J2, I think, but they they need to get it sorted quickly, I think. What about Machida? James, they're looking like a pretty good sort of playoff contender at the moment. I don't think they, not to repeat ourselves too much from last week or possibly even the week before, but they don't sort of wow from sort of minute one to minute 90, do they? But there's obviously a good team in there.
Yeah, especially in the attack. I think it was you and Stu talked about it a couple of weeks ago, and then we saw it last week against Kanazawa. They've got a really good attack with Hirato and Ota in particular on sides. And then with the likes of Dudu or Chongtese or Vinicius Araujo coming off the bench, or they've got that Hasegawa as well. So they've got a lot of attacking options, a lot of goal scorers, and that's what did for Kanazawa last week. They didn't really need to show all that sort of goal scoring prowess in this match against Ryukyu, but I think they, and their defence will have busier matches than this one. But yeah, I think they look like a pretty good playoff contender, sitting in fifth. They're only 9 points off second, so it's not inconceivable that they could push for top two.
Yeah, no, that stands to reason. I always get the feeling with Machida that they're kind of holding out on us a little bit, and they always have an extra gear that they're not going to show us. And I've started to wonder if, like, is that, like, when you sort of watch peak Barcelona, like 5 or 6 years ago, they could just kind of, they could access that extra gear at will if they needed it. And I think very, very top teams can just go up a gear when they need to. Whereas with Match, you know, I'm wondering now if, I think that that extra gear is in there, but it might be like locked somehow and they can't get at it. Because I got the feeling, to be honest, even if Match had kept Rukia at arm's length in this game, if Rukia had equalised, I think Match probably would have gone and got another goal because they would have stepped up a bit. But I wonder if it's only very, very good teams that can access that extra gear whenever they want. Most other teams have to kind of try and play at full tilt and get two goals up, and then they can relax a bit. So I'll be really, I'm kind of curious to see at some point in the next 17 rounds, Matchida are going to be under pressure and they're going to need that extra gear like right now. And I don't know. I'm curious. Like you said, so many good attacking players. We talked in preseason that the central defence is not the not the youngest or the most agile, but it's not really been that big of a factor this season. They've not been exposed that many times because the ball spends a lot of time in Matchida's midfield rather than their sort of centre backs being exposed really. But I just wonder if like why are you kind of holding out on us with the extra gear? Like I want to see like Dudu and Yamaguchi, Ota, Teze, Vinicius. I want to see them all start at once. I'm like get them all on, you know. Yeah, just one 1-1-9 formation or something. But I think it was an interesting game, but it was an interesting tactical match and not really a spectacular one. But Rukia, lots of work to do. I think it's fair to say. Speaking of work to do, James, we should probably take a quick recording break here, if that's okay. In a minute, the listeners are going to hear me rounding up the rest of the round 23 action. Please hang around, James, because I want to talk to you about the round 24 preview for this weekend as well. So, yeah, please stay tuned. Here comes the round 23 wrap-up. Welcome back, everyone. John Steele here again to round up the rest of the round 23 J2 action. And let's finally talk about it. The big game at the top of the table from last weekend, and Yokohama FC beat Niigata 2-0 at Mitsuzawa. And this means Yokohama leapfrog Niigata at the top of the table and get some revenge for their 3-0 defeat at the Big Swan earlier this season. A great start for Yokohama in a cracking atmosphere and a full away end, of course. Niigata supporters always back their team. And Yokohama FC took the lead in the 20th minute when Koki Ogawa headed in a cross from captain Tatsuya Hasegawa. A possible turning point came just before half-time in this game when there was a flashpoint between Yokohama centre-back Gabriel and Niigata's Koji Suzuki. Gabriel didn't like a pretty standard challenge from Suzuki and ended up pushing him with both hands in the chest. And Gabriel got a yellow card, but it could easily have been a red. There wasn't much difference between this incident and the red card for Shota Arai in the Jeff Chiba match, for example. Just to mention, Suzuki's play acting was embarrassingly small time, pretending to have been hit in the face and rolling around on the floor. So not a great few minutes for anybody really, but Gabriel escaped. And in the second half, Yokohama put the game out of Niigata's reach with a second goal in the 70th minute. A dainty touch and through ball from Hasegawa sent Kazuma Watanabe clean through, and he confidently fired into the far corner for 2-0. Before that, Sven Brodersen in the Yokohama goal had made an excellent save from Shion Honma to preserve Yokohama's lead, and it finished Yokohama FC 2, Niigata 0. Yokohama unbeaten in 6 matches now, since losing to Niigata back in round 17, and this was Niigata's first defeat in 7, and quite a flat performance in the end. Fajiano Okayama are still 4th, 5 points behind Sendai, after they conceded an 89th minute equaliser away at Mito. This game finished 1-1. Okayama nearly went in front midway through the first half, with Mito goalie Luis Yamaguchi making a good save, but from the resulting corner, Mito conceded a harsh penalty. A handball was given against Yuto Mori, but he kind of controlled the ball on his sort of the top of his arm near the shoulder, so he seemed a bit nonplussed by that, but a penalty was given, and Jordi Bice, wearing the captain's armband, scored it to make it 1-0 to the visitors. Mito came on strong after the hour in this game. Kosuke Kinoshita clipped the ball against the inside of the post. And then Mito did have the ball in the net, but Kinoshita was given offside. I'm not sure that was the correct decision based on the replay, but the goal was disallowed. But Mito did get a deserved equaliser right at the end, Koichi Murata managed to get the ball across the six-yard box for Mizuki Ando to fire into the roof of the net for 1-1. There was nearly time for Mito to even win it in stoppage time. A deflected shot rattled the Okayama crossbar from outside the box, and the very last touch of the game was a brilliant reaction save from Okayama keeper Daiki Hotta, pushing out an effort from Kenshin Takagishi. But yes, it finished Mito 1, Okayama 1. Okayama unbeaten in 7, and going well without being too spectacular, you have to say. The game between Nagasaki and Akita at Transcosmos Stadium finished 0-0, mainly thanks to the efforts of visiting goalie Yudai Tanaka, who made a string of excellent second-half saves. Tanaka saved well twice from Edgar Junio, then came out of his penalty area to put in an excellent tackle on Takashi Sawada, and then reacted brilliantly to keep out a header from Shunya Yoneda right at the end. So Nagasaki 0, Akita 0 in a very entertaining game. Incoming Nagasaki boss Fabio Carrile, who will take charge from the next game, will have seen quite a few positives here. But yes, Nagasaki are in 6th on a run of 5 games unbeaten. Akita did really well defensively here, but they haven't won any of their last 7. Oita Trinita emerged victorious from their Kyushu derby at Kumamoto, winning 2-1 with goals from Hiroto Nakagawa and Arata Watanabe. Oita went ahead midway through the first half when Nakagawa stooped to head in a left-wing cross from Kazuki Fujimoto. But Kumamoto rallied, with Shun Ito hitting the crossbar from the edge of the penalty area, and they were level before half-time, with Toshiki Takahashi heading in Naohiro Sugiyama's cross. Shun Takagi, the Oita keeper, made a terrible decision to come off his line to try and collect this ball. He was never going to get there ahead of Takahashi, so it was 1-1 at half-time. 12 minutes into the second half, Oita got what proved to be the winner. Watanabe getting onto the end of a hopeful long ball, bustling his way into the penalty area and firing low into the bottom corner for Kumamoto 1, Oita 2. Oita will be missing their Brazilian defender Pereira for a while out with injury, so it was a pleasing win for them. 1 defeat in their last 6 now, they're in 9th, and this defeat ends a run of 4 straight draws for Kumamoto. They're in 11th. At the bottom of the table, hashtag big boy football, the potential relegation 6-pointer between Tochigi and Iwate finished 1-1 at the Kanseki Stadium. Tochigi were reduced to 10 men in the 26th minute here, with Spanish centre-back Carlos Gutierrez being shown a straight red card for a last-man foul on Yohei Okuyama. But the home side then went ahead 10 minutes into the second half, courtesy of a low 25-yard strike from Ryo Nemoto. And it looked as if Tochigi's 10 men were going to hold out for a precious win, but in the 82nd minute, Iwate equalised, their captain Yusuke Muta heading the ball in at the back post from a deep right-wing cross. I have to say, he looked suspiciously offside in the position that he scored from, but the goal was given. Iwate went all out looking for a winner as the game reached its climax, and they nearly scored in an almighty goal-mouth scramble, and then Shuhei Kawata, Tochigi goalkeeper, had to make a good late block from Kenneth Otabor, but it finished Tochigi 1, Iwate 1. Tochigi in 18th, 2 points clear of the relegation zone, and Iwate just a point behind them in 20th. Tochigi, no wins in any of their last 4, but at least this was a third straight draw for them. Iwate are doing really well in terms of form, unbeaten in their last 5, 2 wins and 3 draws, but they're obviously disappointed they didn't win this game, having played against 10 men for so long. Omiya Ardija dropped back into the relegation zone after losing 1-0 at home to Kanazawa, who were in 10th. Kanazawa's winner came very late here in the 86th minute, a stunning strike from Keita Fujimura. He took aim with the outside of his boot from about 25 yards and sent a lovely curling effort past Omiya keeper Ko Shimura. Early on, Kanazawa had a let-off when Omiya had a goal ruled out for a foul inside the penalty area. It was Shunsuke Kikuchi who headed into the net, but I think a foul was given on the Kanazawa goalkeeper. It seemed very generous, but the goal was disallowed. Also in the first half, Shimura made a great close-range block from Yohei Toyoda as Kanazawa threatened at the other end. Omiya should have been in front with about 10 minutes left. Kanazawa keeper Yuto Shirai made a superb double save from Jin Izumisawa at the far post, and then came that Fujimura wonder goal, really, to seal 3 points for the visitors. So Omiya 0, Kanazawa 1 at full time. Omiya's first defeat in 3 games. It puts them back into the relegation zone after Iwate got a point from their game at Tochigi. Elsewhere, there was an exciting finish to Yamaguchi's home game against Kofu. Yamaguchi eventually won 2-1 with all of the goals coming in the last 15 minutes. Kofu went ahead, though, in the 75th minute when Willian Lira's cross took a big deflection off Yamaguchi captain Hirofumi Watanabe and ended up looping over Kentaro Seki in the Yamaguchi goal. But the hosts responded straight away with Georgi Ikegami heading in a beautiful cross from Takaya Numata just 3 minutes later. And then the winner came in dramatic fashion in the 94th minute, a low drive into the bottom corner from almost 30 yards from Kento Hashimoto, a second goal of the season for him. There was some controversy after that because there were about 30 seconds of stoppage time left when that goal went in, and Yamaguchi took about a minute or more celebrating the goal, but the referee then blew the full-time whistle before Kofu could restart the game from the kickoff. So Kofu players and coaching staff not happy at all about that, but complaining didn't do them any good, and it finished Yamaguchi 2, Kofu 1. Yamaguchi up into 16th on 27 points, 5 clear of the relegation zone. Kofu are slightly better off, 3 points ahead in 13th. Finally, from the weekend, Tokushima won for the first time in 9 matches, 1-0 at home against Gunma. It was pretty much one-way traffic in this game as Gunma continued to struggle. Tokushima nearly went in front towards the end of the first half when Koki Sugimori headed El Sino's cross against the post, but the ball didn't go over the line. Gunma held on grimly, but their defence was eventually breached by another header in the 77th minute. Mushaga Bakenga, who just come on as a substitute, got on the end of Masaki Watai's cross to score his 4th J-League goal of the season. Final score was Tokushima 1, Gunma 0. There was the sight late on of Gunma keeper Masatoshi Kushibiki nearly getting his head onto a stoppage time corner as Gunma threw the kitchen sink at Tokushima, but that was about as good as it got, really. Gunma are really struggling at the moment. 6 defeats in a draw from their last 7. They're really sliding down the table. And Niigata at home is their next match. So it doesn't get any easier for them. All right, I think that's all the round 23 action covered. So please stay tuned. In a minute, you're going to hear me in conversation with James. We're previewing the round 24 game. So please stay tuned. Welcome back, everyone. I think that's all of the round 23 action sorted out or reviewed as best we can. So James is back with me now. We're going to take a look at the weekend action. Round 24 is coming up. And James, we're into July, which is a bit scary, to be honest. But most of the matches this weekend are going to be on Saturday, July the 2nd. We do have a temperature worrying 2 p.m. kickoff, but it's up in the north in Akita against Yamaguchi. So hopefully temperatures and humidity won't be too much of a problem. And then 4 games at 6 o'clock on Saturday. As far as I can tell, they're all bangers, James. It's top of the table. Yokohama go away to Mito, who are 12th. There's a big game at Nozita. It's a 5th against 3rd. A match to host Sendai. At the bottom, goodness me, big boy football. Iwate against Omiya. That's a 20th against 21st. And Kofu against Nagasaki. I think Nagasaki are in 6th, but this will be the debut for their new Brazilian coach, Fabio Carille. He'll be in the dugout for this one. And then at 7 p.m, 4th place Okayama are hosting Kumamoto. You've also got Yamagata against Tochigi, Kanazawa against Tokushima, and Oita against Jeff Chiba. And then there's for the late people, I don't even know what that means, 7:30, Gunma against Niigata. So 2nd place Niigata going to 19th place the Gunma. James, where should we be focusing our attention on Saturdays? Lots to choose from.
Yeah, there is loads to choose. I'll start with the Akita Yamaguchi, I think, would be interesting, because that's 17th against 16th. They're level on points, but Akita have been really on the slide. It wasn't that long ago when they were a top 10 team, and I think they've had quite a bad space of injuries, and they're just not getting the results. So I think that's quite an important match for those two teams. And then, like you mentioned, Iwate against Omiya, that's, I've written big one next to that one, 20th against 21st, only 1 point difference. Iwate have been getting results recently, Omiya not so much, although they've been improved slightly since Naoki Soma took over. And they were, I think, perhaps unfortunate against Kanazawa in that they couldn't hold out for a 0-0 draw, or they couldn't snatch a 1-0 because they did have a few chances late on, but they lost. So the defence has obviously improved. So that one, I think, is obviously going to be interesting. And then, yeah, Machida Sendai, fifth against third. I think you talked about earlier, this match could be, I mean, if Machida win this, then it would perhaps mean that Sendai are less of a title chaser and more of a playoff team. Assuming that Niigata and Yokohama FC extend the gap at the top. And then Yamagata Tochigi, I think this will be interesting to see whether Yamagata can break Tochigi down, because they've been struggling to break teams down, and Tochigi are really good at eking out results. You know, 1-0s and 1-1s and 2-1s, or not many 2-1s, because they don't usually score two in a game. And then what else? Okayama against Kumamoto, very contrasting styles, I think will be an interesting matchup. And then Gunma Niigata as well. Gunma are in trouble, I think. They're in a terrible run of form. They were in the playoffs not that long ago, weren't they? Quite early in the season. They started really well. They haven't won since God knows when. Whereas Niigata have just lost for the first time in ages to Yokohama FC, so they'll need to rebound. So Gunma might feel their wrath.
No, these are all good points. I probably should have just rolled in the one game on Sunday as well. I don't know why I didn't. Sorry about that. But yeah, Sunday, July the 3rd, is a Tokyo Verdy against Ryukyu. So as mentioned, just in the kind of a pick of the week section, yeah, big task for Ryukyu to try and get their season back on track away at Tokyo Verdy. Yeah, I think that Yamagata Tochigi game is an interesting shout. I've just got this vision of like it's 0-0 in the 85th minute, and like Kisho Yano, you know, just powering in a header, you know, from 6 yards. It just has that feel about it, doesn't it? The way that their seasons are going. But yeah, I think there's lots to keep an eye on. I mean, Yokohama FC are top at the moment, but not infallible by any means, I don't think. Mita always give teams a pretty stern inspection, don't they, defensively. When they welcome teams to the K's Denki, so that could be a good game too. And yeah, Iwate and Omiya, I mean, I actually find it quite interesting that Omiya have got Naoki Soma in charge, because it's sort of like he's quite a sort of steely, no-nonsense guy, but Omiya is not, you don't think of sort of steely and no-nonsense and not the adjectives that you go for when you're thinking about Omiya, are they? So yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting one, and it's just bizarre to think that Iwate, you know, newly promoted Iwate are hosting Omiya, and Iwate are ahead of Omiya in the table. It gives one pause, you know, James, to think about that. And yeah, Kanazawa and Tokushima is going to be 1-1, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
And that's all we have jinxed it now. Yeah, apologize to you for that. Yeah, never mind. Okay, well, yeah, I think. Yeah, it's sort of difficult to know where we should recommend listeners sort of direct their energies on Saturday. But I think you can't go wrong if you just sort of settle down at 6 p.m. I think on Saturday, because you've got Mito Yokohama, Machida Sendai, Kofu Nagasaki, and Iwate Omiya all kicking off at the same time. So that's going to be entertaining stuff, I think. All right, James, I promised I would get you out of the door within a sort of an hour or so. We're touching on that now, so I will let you get off to bed and get your beauty sleep. But thanks for coming on the pod and talking J2 with me as ever.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, always good. Okay, well, yeah, thanks as always for listening and downloading the pod. We really appreciate that, of course, and we appreciate the Patreon support for the big J-Talk podcaster and J-Tet as well. So thanks for supporting us on Patreon if you do. Please stay tuned. That's all of the J2 for this show, but Magic Mike Innes is going to be up next. He's got all the J3 latest in J-Talk Short Corner. So, yeah, don't go anywhere. Here's Mike with all the J3 news. J-Talk Short Corner is coming up.
Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this bumper episode, I'll be looking back on the matches in Round 14, answering some listener questions, as well as previewing the Round 15 games coming up this weekend. First, some items of J3 news since the last pod. FC Imabari have announced that Dutch striker Ralf Soentjens has been diagnosed with malignant lymphoma, a cancer of the lymphatic system which supports the body's immune responses. Having signed for the club in late March, the 33-year-old returned to the Netherlands in mid-May following the discovery of a tumour during a routine scan to investigate a shoulder injury. Imabari say they are expecting treatment, which the player will undergo in the Netherlands, to last at least 6 months. All good wishes to Soentjens and his family. And Gainare Tottori have announced striker Yu Okubo injured his left ACL in the round 12 win at Vanarari Hachinohe and is expected to be out for 8 months. Okubo is Gainare's top scorer, having netted 5 of the team's 13 goals. Meanwhile, Fukushima United say they've cancelled the contract of centre-back Shoto Suzuki at the player's request and that he will retire from football at the end of June. Suzuki, who's 29, has spent most of his pro career with Roasso Kumamoto but moved from Katare Toyama to Fukushima during the winter. Under coach Toshihiro Hattori, he's been behind the likes of Shun Obu, Kazuki Dohana and Hiroto Yukie for the central defensive positions, and Suzuki will depart Fukushima without having made a J-League appearance for the club. On to the action now, and over the weekend the league season moved on to round 14 with 4 games on Saturday the 25th. Kagoshima United sank to their second defeat in 3 as they were beaten at improving Ehime FC. The only goal of the game came in the 8th minute, Motoki Ohara setting up a Kohei Shin to cross from the left for Takashi Kondo to rise unchallenged and head past Fuma Shirasaka. Kagoshima's first decent chance didn't happen until just after half-time when Frank Romero's clever flick enabled Rei Yonezawa to get away from young right-back Shuma Mihara, but Yonezawa put his shot over the bar. Ehime had 2 good opportunities to extend their lead, first when Kondo blocked Shosei Okamoto's attempt to play out from the back and Riki Matsuda fed the loose ball to Ohara, whose 10-yard shot was brilliantly tipped over by Shirasaka. Then when substitute Tomoya Osawa received a pass from Mihara and surged through the visiting defence only to blast his shot off target. Kagoshima almost snatched a point in injury time when Hiroya Nodake's cross was only partially cleared by Kei Oshiro and the ball came to Kota Hoshi, whose shot was well stopped by Kenta Tokushige. A match-winning save by Tokushige. Final score, Ehime 1, Kagoshima 0. And Ehime have rounded off June by beating 2 of the best teams in the division. They might be down in 7th place, but are they in contention? Kagoshima and top scorer Kota Arita were kept very quiet. Katare Toyama set a new club record of 6 consecutive league wins by overcoming AC Nagano Parseiro in a storm-delayed encounter at Toyama Sports Park. Tsubasa Yoshihira put Katare ahead in the 13th minute as he collected a pass from Arthur Silva, advanced on goal and struck a speculative 25-yard shot that deflected off Hayato Ikegaya and beat the wrong-footed Issei Oichi. From then on, Nobuhiro Ishizaki's team battled their way to another clean sheet. Parseiro restricted to a Keita Yoshioka header saved comfortably by Genki Yamada and a Masaki Miyasaka free kick that curled just wide. Final score, Toyama 1, Nagano 0. The last 5 of those 6 straight wins for Katare have all been 1-0. Not always the most expressive, but this was a strong defensive display. A first start of the season up front for Parseiro's Tsubasa Sano, but Yuki Stealth's team couldn't find a way through and now have 1 win in 7. After two defeats brought about by defensive lapses, Fujieda MyFC returns to winning ways at the team with the division's poorest attacking record, YSCC Yokohama. Kei Hoshikawa's YSCC lived dangerously throughout the first half and eventually fell behind on 41 minutes when Takuya Fujiwara failed to deal with Ekiyuki Yokoyama's near post cross, allowing Tojiro Kubo to head in. Fujiwara, returning to the YSCC starting lineup for the first time since April, also played a part in conceding the second goal midway through the second half, his ill-judged defensive header forcing keeper Ryo Ishii out of his area to make a rushed clearance that fell to Masahiko Sugita, who curled the ball into an empty net. With 17 minutes left, Fujieda made it 3, rookie Takato Nakai and Shota Suzuki combining cleverly to work the ball in from the left for Yokoyama, who turned away from, yes, Fujiwara, and finished easily past Ishii. Final score, YSCC 0, Fujieda 3. The J-League website recording YSCC's shot count for this game as 1. MyFC able to concentrate on showing their attacking qualities and thus in their element. Defensive blunders weren't only to be found at YSCC, as Gainare Tottori keeper Koshiro Itohara handed the lead to SC Sagamihara in the 11th minute of their game at the Axis Bird Stadium. Itohara's pass gave no chance to his teammate Hiroto Sese, and Sagamihara's Shogo Nakahara stepped gratefully in to stroke the ball home from the edge of the area. Tottori, however, are unbeaten in 3 and, via a delightful team move, pulled level 14 minutes later. Passing out of defence, the ball reached right back Naoya Uozato, who fed Ryuji Sawakami on the halfway line. Sawakami turned and provided a defence-splitting pass for Takeru Kiyonaga to run onto and clip into the net past Kentaro Kakoi. And Gainare repeated the trick to go 2-1 up just before half-time, Uozato and Sawakami combining to set up Kiyonaga, who sprinted to the byline and crossed for Ryosuke Tamura to finish his first league goal for the club. Sagamihara equalised with 21 minutes left, Jungo Fujimoto's free kick hitting the bar, and star of the moment Takumi Kato bossing Uozato to head in the rebound. And Kato almost won it with 4 minutes left when he raced to get on the end of Ryoma Ishida's cross and slammed a diving header against the post. Final score, Tottori 2, Sagamihara 2. Gainare showing the football they can play and perhaps getting away with their weaknesses at the back. Sagamihara without Kato are not an enticing prospect. Now on to Sunday the 26th, and the headliner between promotion chasers Matsumoto Yamaga and Iwaki FC. For the visitors, coach Hiromasa Suguri made some interesting choices with his team selection, as Ryo Endo was plunged straight in at centre-back after his loan move from Albirex Niigata. There was a first start of the season for Daiki Yamaguchi on the left, only a second start for Kaina Tanimura up front. Matsumoto's Hiroshi Nanami, meanwhile, welcomed back Paulinho in central midfield after injury. A cagey match burst into life in the closing minutes of the first half as Iwaki took the lead when they played the ball across the edge of the area and Hiroto Iwabuchi set up left-back Masaru Hidaka for a low shot that arrowed through a crowd of players and into the bottom corner. But the home side equalised in injury time, Masato Tokida playing a long ball out from defence that immediately put Iwaki on the back foot. Ayumu Yokoyama used the outside of his right boot to cross from the byline, Ren Komatsu headed it back across the face of goal, and Ryo Toyama raced between the static Eiji Miyamoto and Yuto Yamashita to convert. 7 minutes into the second half, Yamaga had more joy down the left-hand side. Yokoyama skipping away from Iwabuchi and laying it off to Yusuke Kikui. His shot was blocked by ex-Matsumoto defender Kyowan Hoshi, but the loose ball fell to Toyama, who fired in from 8 yards. In response, Suguri made a triple substitution, but neither that or a second yellow card for Yamaga's Akira Ando, awarded for blocking the taking of a quick free kick, provided Iwaki with a way back into the match. Final score, Matsumoto 2, Iwaki 1. Toyama scored the goals, but Yokoyama's pace was key to winning this game. Iwaki couldn't withstand the pressure and, perhaps mentally, once again, weren't quite on it. And keeping up the pressure on Iwaki and the rest of the top four are FC Gifu, who made it 17 points from the last 7 games with an ominously easy victory at Tegevajaro Miyazaki. Tegevajaro did go in front via Masato Kudo's first goal since March. Yudai Tokunaga playing a long ball forward. Kudo's initial attempt blocked by Tomoya Ugajin, the rebound being scrambled back over the line. That was as good as it got for the hosts. Gifu equalised with the last action of the first half as Junior Tanaka nodded on Ryo Kubota's corner and former Miyazaki favourite Kosuke Fujioka beat Tokunaga to the ball to head in at the back post. In the 61st minute, Fujioka crossed from the left and Ugajin hurtled into the box ahead of Takuma Sonoda to finish from 10 yards. And shortly afterwards, the visitors had more joy attacking down the left against a home side who couldn't clear their lines. The ball coming to Tanaka, whose 20-yard shot was blocked by Kaede Shinbo, but fell to Fujioka to make it 3-1. With 16 minutes left, Heniki outbattled Shinbo and slid the ball into the middle. Junki Hata couldn't have missed, but Tsuyoshi Fujitake's desperate defensive lunge served only to prod it over the line for an own goal. Final score, Miyazaki 1, Gifu 4. Bad news for Tegevajaro coach Yasushi Takasaki, for whom this second half display looked like a team falling apart. In contrast, Gifu appeared a unit, still unbeaten under Yuji Yokoyama and with Fujioka, the star man. Two incidents decided the Tohoku derby between Vanrari Hachinohe and Fukushima United. The first was in the 9th minute, the awarding by referee Kazuyoshi Karashima of a straight red card to Fukushima defender Kazuki Dohana, who was caught in possession and pulled down Kazuya Niwa, who otherwise would have been through on goal. This put Fukushima on the back foot for the whole of the rest of the match, and indeed, YSCC style, they recorded only a single shot on goal. Conversely, Hachinohe were forced to take the initiative, but weren't able to make the breakthrough until the 89th minute, when Yusei Kayanuma picked up a misplaced pass by Kosuke Tanaka and fed Kai Sasaki. He slipped the pass through to fellow substitute Aoi Sato, whose shot from the edge of the area nicked off Tanaka and past Kaito Yamamoto. Jubilant scenes on the bench and among the home fans. Final score, Hachinohe 1, Fukushima 0. New Vanrare coach Ryo Shigaki wins his first home match in charge, although they took their time. After the red card, Fukushima aimed only to escape with a point and in the end weren't quite able to do so. No wins in 5 now for the early season leaders, down to 9th in the standings. At home to Kamatamari Sanuki, Giramans Kita Kyushu finally managed to put an end to their winless run. The key moment came 9 minutes before half-time. Yuya Takazawa's well-timed pass opening up the Sanuki defence. Mitsunari Musaki slipped it to Ryo Sato, who finished confidently from 15 yards. Giramans had a couple of chances for a second, but found Kamatamari keeper Takuya Takahashi on good form. First, when he kept out Sato's angled shot after a misplaced pass by Kanta Usui. Later, when he saved Yasufumi Nishimura's close-range shot following good work by Kotaro Fujikawa. Sanuki rarely threatened, their closest opportunity coming when Hayato Hasegawa fed Mizuki Uchida for a well-struck 20-yard shot, deflected past the post by Takezawa on defensive duties. Final score, Kitakyushu 1, Seneki 0. The result is all for Giravance, who climbed to 13th as a consequence. Kamatamare reduced to long-range efforts. Kohei Matsumoto as their main striker barely involved. Finally, FC Imabari and Azul Claro Numazu played out a draw. Most of the action in the last 15 minutes of this one, Numazu having a couple of half chances. Takuya Sugai's 15-yard shot deflected over by Wataru Noguchi. A close-range effort from Takumi Hama, which homekeeper Shu Mogi did well to block. Then at the other end, Marcus Indio drew a good save from Hiromu Musha with a volley from 25 yards. Noguchi will have nightmares about missing the target in a one-on-one after being put through on goal by Kanta Chiba. And with the game moving into stoppage time, Taisei Takase sent over a long cross. Chiba cleverly peeled away from defender Yuya Tsukegi, but his header hit the post and bounced away. Final score, Imabari 0, Numazu 0. Lack of composure costing the home side. Azul Claro scrapping out an away point in this sort of game makes them an improvement this year on the 2021 side. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 14. The race is hotting up as the top four teams are Kagoshima with 29 points, then Iwaki, Matsumoto and Toyama all have 28. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are Sanuki slipping to 15th with 14 points, Hachinohe with 13, Tottori 12, and still at the bottom with 5, YSCC. Let's pause before the round 15 previews and try to answer some listener questions. J Football Analytics was kind enough to send in several points for discussion. First, he asks about the best strike partnership in the division. Is it Corky Arita and Rei Yonezawa at Kagoshima? It's a good question, and certainly Arita and Yonezawa have scored 13 goals between them, more than any two players from a single other club. The next best are Yokoyama and Toyama from Matsumoto, and Arima and Iwabuchi from Iwaki, who both have 12. But I'm not sure I'd describe any of those as partnerships in the sense of being pairs who play off one another. I don't think that's how teams tend to play in J3. Plus, lots of clubs rotate personnel or positions or both, which makes it hard for partnerships to develop. If you look at Kagoshima, they don't rotate much, but what they do is set up with Arita as the main striker and a bank of three behind him. Junki Goryo on the right, Frank Romero in the middle and Yonezawa on the left. Arita is a very good signing, a good close-range finisher, but also a team player. Yonezawa last year was the main man and we noticed him for that reason. This year his role is different, but we're still seeing a lot of him because he's good at finding space, is difficult for J3 defenders to cope with, and is playing alongside better players. This leads on to J Football Analytics' second question about players, which is, who do you think will make the move to a higher division? In considering this, I'm looking at first or second year pros who've made an impact and have energy, strength and speed. A few names are in defence: Eisuke Watanabe of Kagoshima, Imabari's Tomoya Ando and Riku Saga of Iwaki. In midfield, perhaps my favourite player of the season so far, Yusuke Kikui from Matsumoto, and a couple of players from more overlooked teams, Kanta Usui from Seneki and Keigo Enomoto at Fujieda. Up front, it's hard to see further than Ayumu Yokoyama and Takumi Kato. J Football Analytics also mentions two clubs at different ends of the table. Is YSCC's time as a J-League club over? He asks. Well, there's no relegation from J3 this year. That's something the league are tentatively talking about for 2023. But so far, they are clearly the weakest side. It's sometimes felt like YSCC are a team from a lower division. And the bad news is that up to now, there's been no sense the new coach can get better results. Then up towards the promotion places, he asks, how have Iwaki been able to consistently get promoted? Do you see them as a future J1 team? I can't comment on the club before this season, but the squad look well prepared. They obviously make use of the facilities available to them because they're very fit. They work very hard. They really understand the demands of the professional game in a way that players at other clubs perhaps don't. Iwaki might be very ambitious, and clubs from smaller provincial cities have sometimes done very well in the J-League, Kashima Antlers, for example. But there's work to do on the stadium. Iwaki have mostly been using J-Village for their home games this season, and building the fan base, which at the moment is maybe a little bigger than Fukushima's, but not by much. So they're some way off being J1 ready, but Iwaki are clearly heading in the right direction. In their questions, Gabriele Anello and Gifurichi are also focused on promotion. Gab says, does any club really want to go up? And the four relegated teams don't look ready for going back to J2, although Yamaga look consistent. Richie's angle is, he's drawn the line for promotion contenders at Nagano, who are in 10th. What do you think? He asks. Well, my interpretation is we're looking at a very exciting promotion race in J3 this year. I think the contenders are the three teams who've been around the top few placings since the start of the season, Kagoshima, Iwaki and Matsumoto, plus three more who have improved following disappointing starts, Toyama, Gifu and Ehime. I take a different view from Gab. I think that as we have four teams with a record of 2 points per game or better, that's indicative of a level of performance throughout the season. Gifu and Ehime are a little further back, but they're now playing well and getting good results. Otherwise, I don't think Fujieda have the defensive strength to improve, and the teams down to Nagano, as Richie mentions. Are they bad teams? No, but to me there's no evidence that they can become more consistent. As fans though, we've got a great competitive rest of the season to look forward to. Many thanks to J Football Analytics, Gabriele Anello and Gifu Richie for their questions. Just time now for a quick look ahead to this weekend and round 15, with 7 games on Saturday the 2nd of July. Leaders Kagoshima head down to Kitakyushu. Can Iwaki bounce back at home to off-form Miyazaki? Matsumoto go north to Hachinohe. Can Toyama extend their winning run at Fukushima? Potential for a very exciting game between Fujieda and Ehime. Big game for two teams lower down the table, Numazu against Tottori. Can Sagami Hana show some improvement at home to Nagano? Then on Sunday the 3rd, Gifu are at home to Imabari. And finally, Seneki have the chance to pick up points at home to YSCC. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.